I hope I presented with you some meditative material, but now I want to do a bit of philosophy with you to clarify something. So this is attempting to link what all those beautiful texts are saying with what we learnt at school, people of my age, about transubstantiation. So I want to do that with you as clearly and as thoroughly and as accurately as I can. So let's start. Our senses. Don't have to describe this to you. Let's talk about our sight, our touch and our taste. All they do, and it's a good thing to do, is they reach the surface of things. You see what it looks like. You don't see what it is. You taste what it tastes like. You don't taste what it is. You get me? So all the senses are meant to... things impinge upon us through our senses. But, thank God, we've got this other thing called the intelligence. From the Latin intus and legere. Legere to read. Intus, within. We've got this penetrating mind that starts very young. Think of your grandkids and they're saying why or what or who. And they're asking you enormous questions because their little mind is not satisfied with just the senses. It's inquiring, isn't it? Trying to penetrate in to find out what's really going on here. And you're flabbergasted and you give them an answer which is so unsatisfactory and they're quite happy with it. And you think, oh, thank God for that. But then next year they'll come back with the same question a bit deeper. But you don't have to give them the deepest answers now or they think you're barmy. The art of being a mother or father or uncle or grandfather or anybody is to somehow satisfy the inquiring mind at the level of the inquiry. Okay, so that's it. We've got this wonderful thing called intelligence, which is asking questions to penetrate to what is it. And when we do penetrate, we call it understanding. We're looking for what stands under, okay, grounds the taste and the smell and the taste and the look and the feel. What is it is what we're looking for. Now, if you look at the word understanding and look at the Latin substance, I hope you can see it's the same word. The stand is the same word, and sub is Latin, and under is Anglo-Saxon. Same word. So what your mind is searching for, this is so important, it's searching for the substance. Not in the physical sense of the matter, and this is our problem. When we use the word substance today, and it's fine, language changes with usage, but we're basically talking about the substance, and we say, what is the substance? And we say it's putty, or it's... we want to get hold, like it's the matter, it's the material substance that's there. That's not what we're talking about here in philosophical terms. That's not what Aristotle was talking about, or Thomas Aquinas, or Trent, or the church. So, it's talking in the metaphysical sense. Not the physical, but the metaphysical. The underlying reality is what we're looking for. What is the underlying reality here? Probabilities or possibilities, but sometimes we're quite certain. You know, we can actually come to a conclusion and say that's it, and we've got it. But on really profound matters, we're usually approaching the truth, aren't we? We're kind of getting, we're getting rid of error, which is a wonderful thing to do, and that's what theology is all about, really. And we're facing towards the reality, but there's still more questions to ask and still more insight to get, because ultimately everything is an expression of God, and we can't comprehend God. Until we can comprehend God, we can't comprehend anything, because everything is an expression of God. So since we're never going to be able to comprehend God, it doesn't matter that we're still inquiring a bit, does it? Still searching, but we're searching in the right direction. We're searching, having eliminated, which is what science is doing, isn't it? Error all the time, trying to get rid of what, well, no, that didn't work, so that's not on, that's not on, that's not on, and we're narrowing the field or trying to understand, to get to the underlying reality. So what do we mean when we talk about transubstantiation? We don't mean the physical matter has changed. We don't mean that. We're talking about the metaphysical. We're talking about what the understanding reaches. In this case, enlightened by faith.
So our understanding now has been enlightened by faith. A little child comes into the sacristy for the first time, she or he, to be an altar server. And this probably won't work because they would know a lot already, but let's imagine that. And you're the acolyte, or the senior servers we have, the women or men, and you're putting out the hosts in a little bowl for mass. And the little child says, "What are they?" Well, you'd say, "Well, they don't look too much like it, but they're actually little bits of bread, but the bread hasn't got any yeast in it, so they're able to stay nice and small and flat." I don't know what you'd say, but you know. But if you said it was bread, that's good. You don't have anywhere to go. You have to qualify it a bit, you know, by explaining why it's not looking like the bread at home, but it's bread, basically. And that'll do. It's a good answer, and I don't know that you could say much more. That's what it is. And you've satisfied the little mind, and you've spoken the truth. When a little child sees you coming up to communion and comes up for a little blessing and says, and you put your hand out and it looks the same and it's placed in your hand, and the little child says, "Mummy or Grandma or Nana or what's that?" You can't say bread anymore, because bread is physically, yes, but it's not actually answering the real question. And you have to find words, and I'm not saying what word you'd find for a child, but I'm trying to get to the truth of it. Enlightened by faith, your mind penetrates deeper in, and in the light of Jesus' words at the Last Supper, in the light of the crucifixion, in the light of the church's understanding and faith for 2,000 years, you say, "It's Jesus giving himself to me to nourish my hunger, and he's giving it in a sacrament, through the form of what looks like bread and tastes like bread and feels like bread, and so I can kind of chew it and swallow it, but what I'm really doing is I'm hungry for love, and I know that Jesus is giving himself to me in this moment through the sacrament, the species, the senses, the appearances of bread and wine, of bread." So our understanding, now enlightened by faith, and if you haven't got faith to enlighten your understanding, you can't get to this point, of course. Of course you can't. But everything, our understanding has to be enlightened by faith, by love, by everything. Our understanding is beautifully able to be enlightened. Well, a warning from Augustine, very good advice. Don't seek to understand that you may believe. Believe so that you can understand. That's just wonderful advice. I wish you could give to everybody. Because if you start with your intelligence unenlightened by faith, you got it? Well, your intelligence is a very important thing, and it can only go so far. Of course it can only go so far in honesty. It can't break the barrier. If you start with your intelligence unenlightened by love, there'll be certain things you'll never know. You just never know, because you've never loved or been loved. If you start with your intelligence unenlightened by all the art and music and drama and... Do you get me? It's just your understanding, your penetrating intellect is left to its own devices. It can only go as far as experience has allowed it to go, obviously. It's obvious, isn't it? So it has to be... It's when you're sitting at the Last Supper with Jesus and he offers you this in that moment when he's crying and you're crying and it's dying and you know what it's about. And when you stand at the foot of the cross and then you come together and you experience whatever it is, you kind of know something that you couldn't know without that. And so your penetrating mind has come to understand something because you've believed, you've dared to leap in the dark in a way. With good reasons, of course. It has to be a reasonable leap. And when you do it, it makes sense and so on. So what do we do? Through that understanding enlightened by faith, we attain to a truth that's beyond just the understanding. And we attain a truth when we're right in our judgment of what something is. Here's Thomas Aquinas' wonderful, simple definition of truth. Adequatio rei et intellectus. When the way things are is the way I judge them to be, I have truth. When judgment is not how it looks, how it seems, but if I say, because truth is only in the judgment, it's not in the ideas, it's only there when I say, I, meaning any of us, this is how things really are. if that judgment is adequate to the way things really are, because we have to discover truth, we don't create it, we don't, what do you call that, canter above it. We have to humbly search it out in every field. We have to kind of get the evidence. We have to search and we have to inquire and we have to doubt and wonder and think of other possibilities and all that. But that's what we're doing when we're looking for the truth. Here, we are enlightened by an experience of love, of faith. And for some of us, it will come from, well, I'll just tell you, a man that helped into the church, 35 years ago, was an artist at a school I was teaching at. And he came from a very strict Christian group where there was no joy in it, and it was all very, you know, he was an artist and he needed some kind of, anyhow. So with all that, so at one stage I met him and he was living with a woman who wasn't his wife, and she independently wanted to become Catholic. So they both, you know what I mean? It's all very mysterious the way grace works. So they both actually became Catholic, beautifully. I won't talk about her now, I'll just talk about him. And I thought, well, if they're wanting to become Catholic and they're searching for love, I'm not going to go into all, you know, like try and work out what happened in England when she was, you know what I mean? It gets too complicated. So there must be something good happening, so let's grace it and bless it. And so they became Catholics, and we sorted that out in a way. So, because I don't know what else. What else do you do? I mean, where there's signs of life, you know, things are alive. So, you know, God, I'm telling you too much now. But anyhow, he came into the church because he said matter matters to him, like putty and paint. And he found in the Catholic Church that matter really mattered, and that kind of released him, gave him joy. Or, you get me? His creativity was opened up by the bells and the candles and the words and the people. But what actually impressed him was, for years, while he was building up to this, he used to go to Mass and he'd see people, I hope it's still true, what impressed him was the people were coming back from communion, had something about them that he, I'm getting all emotional, that he wanted. Like there was something about the reverence or the prep, I don't know what, you'd have to be an artist to see it, but he saw it, and that attracted him to this mucked up community that is the Catholic Church. Because enlightened by love there, or by people, or by faith, he came to see something. And our judgment then about this, when you eat this bread and when you drink from this cup, our judgment enlightened by faith is that the substance, not the matter, for God's sake, what the mind reaches to is what substance means, the substantia. That which answers the questions of an intellect enlightened by faith. That's the substance. It's a metaphysical term, not a matter term. So the bread is still physically bread. You can prove that. It's still chemically bread. There's no change in the chemistry or physics. But the underlying reality that's there cannot be defined anymore in simple terms of physics and chemistry. Because someone has made a promise and offered a gift beyond time and beyond space. It's the risen Christ saying, whenever you do, I'm giving myself to you in love. And that's what we know happens. And when we believe that happens, we know it happens. So, the change isn't physical or chemical. It's a metaphysical change. And the word transubstantiation is a metaphysical term. It is a change at the level of being, of reality. We know in faith that Jesus is offering us himself to assuage our deepest hunger and our deepest thirst. So it's rightly said to be symbolic. And that's only a problem if you say the Eucharist is a symbol. Some people think, oh, it's only a symbol. And they think that means it's not real. For God's sake, symbol is the ultimate reality. That's what symbol means. Sumbalo means to throw everything together. A symbol is something that picks up every aspect of the reality in a moment. So, I don't know what, flowers on your wedding day, brought home to your wife or brought home to your husband, I don't know who buys the flowers these days, is a symbol of something. A ring is a symbol, isn't it? Because it says a lot more than physical. It says, I love you forever. Like, I'll always be there for you. And life's full of symbols. And symbols pick up every aspect of reality, and that's why art lives off symbols, because it speaks not just to the intellect, though it does do that,
it also speaks to the feelings and the emotions and the, or every bit of us. And you hear a bit of music and you start crying, don't you? Because I don't know why, but it just does, it just gets in, or you laugh, or you something like that. So that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with symbolic reality, mysterious. And by the way, the Latin for symbolon, symbol, is sacramentum, sacrament. What more do you want? I'll conclude, let the Pope have the last word before we take our break. A lovely statement that he made at Cologne not long after he was made Pope. At the, you know, when the youth had that meeting at Cologne in, well, there it is, 21st of, what month is that, August, is it? 2005, he said this. And it's exceptionally beautiful. By making the bread into his body and the wine into his blood, Jesus anticipates his death. He accepts his death into his heart and transforms it into an action of love. You couldn't say that better. What on the outside is simply brutal violence, the crucifixion, from within becomes an act of total self-giving love. This is the substantial transformation which was accomplished at the Last Supper. Excellent. Good on you, Pope. You've done your philosophy. Like, he's got it well done there. And was destined, this is good, this is really good, and was destined to set in motion a series of transformations, ultimately to the transformation of the world, when God would be all in all. So the transformation of the Eucharist is the source and the summit for something, other transformations that have got to take place. In their hearts, people always and everywhere have somehow expected a change, a transformation of the world. Here now is the central act of transformation that alone can truly renew the world. Violence transformed into love, death into life. Then he goes on. The process of transformation must now gather momentum. He's talking to youth about this, about the Eucharist. The body and blood of Christ are given to us so that we ourselves will be transformed in our turn. We are to become the body of Christ. He is within us and we are in him. His dynamic enters into us and then seeks to spread outward towards others until it fills the world. And he goes on to talk about us forming communities of faith, transforming the world. My mind goes back to that lovely statement of Teilhard de Chardin when he was in the, is it the Gobi Desert? It's in Manchuria or somewhere. And he had no bread and wine with him, and he was doing his archaeological work. And the sun rising above the desert, imagine how beautiful that would be, the golden sun, that was his host. And he wrote a book called Mass Over the World. And he saw that as his offering. The whole world is meant to be a Eucharist. Everything is meant to be transformed by grace. And everything is transformed by grace. A marriage celebrated in a sacrament is not the same as a marriage without the sacrament. There's a transformation takes place. A baby, beautiful as it is, it's baptized, a transformation has taken place. A child confirmed, a transformation has taken place. You've entered into a mysterious, sacramental, symbolic world because it's based on grace now. And something wonderful is happening. And I think that's as far as I'll go, and now I'll give you a little bit of a break.